podcast.
It's We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
And I'm Beth Newell.
We came back.
We're back. We've been back.
Can you believe it?
We didn't really leave.
I mean, we did leave. We went to Thanksgiving.
To the Thanksgiving.
We went to the world famous Thanksgiving. This version was in outside of Boston, Massachusetts, where your parents live. We had a delightful time.
Can I say, unrelated to that trip, that a lot of people this year are getting more on board with actually listening to Native people about cultural issues, and people are starting to talk about how Thanksgiving is incredibly problematic and like as a holiday. And I think, you know, it's one of those things. It feels like we just need to rebrand it a little bit and keep doing the big family meal and just
yes, the like, messaging of it is right on.
Like it's, but the funny thing is all of our holidays are actually just appropriated pagan holidays that Christianity like tried to rebrand into different various lies and things.
Well, and I think that's not just Christianity's sin.
Right. But our country has done this with Thanksgiving, where what used to be sort of like a giving thanks holiday in the fall, where you would like reap the last harvest and then celebrate all the food and like, you know, prepare for the winter and like enjoy a meal with your loved ones. It then became this holiday where we're like, and that's when Native Americans forgave us for everything. And they actually were like, we want you here on our land and we want you to take all of our land.
Well, yeah, that's the origin of Thanksgiving. I mean, obviously the revisionist history of the perfect, we invited the Native Americans to this supper, which I just read a great article with like things that are, you believe about Thanksgiving that aren't true. And the only one I remember is the white people, the pilgrims did not invite the Native Americans to the meal.
When you
they were across the brook having their own festival. And they merged.
When you actually look at American history on a lot of these things, or just world history, it's like we're talking about events that were like genocide on some level, like, you know, like rape and murder of people, removing children from their parents, like these are like, but like if you read the history in our history books, it's like so we just kept expanding west into this beautiful land that was just sitting there waiting for
us. Well, because the victors write the history books.
Right.
I mean, the pilgrims had a you know, where they were living, they had fields that were prepared and tilled because they were prepared by Native Americans who were all dead because of smallpox.
Yeah.
Anyway, fun start.
Well, I think what is relevant about that to the podcast, not aside from the education point, is that one thing I think people have been more sensitive to this year, among other things culturally, is that kids are being given these sort of like reenacting things in like plays or activities or headdresses. Like they're given these activities in schools that are just like, I know in a lot of places, I feel like this is just like some old white teacher who's been doing this thing for years and like they didn't get the memo. Like, you know what I mean? Like
they're still making Native American headdresses out of.
Yeah, I think
construction paper.
In a lot of cases, it's like a very well-meaning white person who really needs to like read an article. But it's just
anyway. Speaking of that, I went to pick up Bryn as after school program had a Thanksgiving party, and I forgot that it was happening, so I showed up and he was just getting food, and so I was like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna go outside and you know, make some phone calls so that he can enjoy his food. He didn't hadn't seen me yet. And as I walked out, I thought, like, was he wearing a construction paper Native American headdress?
Oh yeah.
And I was like, ooh, that's not cool anymore, right? But then I went back an hour later and saw that it was a turkey.
Yeah,
wearing a turkey hat.
But it had turkey feathers on a hat in a way that was like very reminiscent of.
You could tell whoever learned that learned it one way, and then they go, "Let's make it a turkey," and it was an appropriate shift.
Yeah, but someone got very attached to the idea of putting like headbands on kids around fall. Like,
yeah, it's moved in the right direction. But yeah, I mean, Thanksgiving. The core of it is a time to be thankful, and I think I'm behind that 100%. A time to get together with family. Like, we celebrate Christmas. Well, personally, I don't do it for Jesus anymore. It's about family.
I just do it for the likes.
I just do it for the tradition and the rules. I'm so excited for Christmas this year. Bryn, he's ready for the big Christmas. Can we talk about the advent calendar?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing is, I have another advent thing coming. Or is that what it's called? No,
advent
it's not
calendar?
Called an advent. It's just...
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Well, I was talking about the advent calendar, but you said that you have another advent thing coming.
Yeah.
Another advent calendar?
Sort of, but... It's like...
This is so mysterious. What are you talking about?
It's like this wooden advent calendar where you like put... it's like a Christmas tree with all these little circle holes. And then
oh,
you put...
Oh, I love those.
Yeah. I was trying to find something like... When I was a kid, I had this thing that I loved that I don't think anyone really makes something like it right now. Maybe they do. But it was like... It hung on the wall. It was made of cloth. And there was all these little pockets for each day of the month with a number on it.
Yes.
And then you would move this little mouse from pocket to pocket.
I've seen that too. I love it.
I loved that.
I love all of these.
These are the kind of holiday activities that are great. Like, I think if you remember that so much of the joy of Christmas is like the lead up to Christmas, then I feel like you can kind of like tone down the consumerism and stress of like... gift buy.
Oh, I love the build up is everything.
Yeah.
That's why I love Christmas morning and we have a lot of traditions and things because it's all about just extending that moment of excitement. But Bryn an advent calendar, a simple one. And you'd think that he'd be really into it because he loves the calendar and crossing off the days of the month.
He really didn't get it.
Well, he does love it, but he immediately opened all of the doors and then lied about it.
It was too tempting. You know, it's funny because they have ones like that have candy in them, but I
don't...
Ooh,
I used to get some of those.
I know I could never trust him with something like that.
Well, that's the type of thing, though, that he couldn't possibly lie about. Because the candy would be... Well, he'd still try.
He'd be surprised.
So let's talk about... We took them to Thanksgiving. It was nice and easy. The drive back was not.
We had a lot of traffic. Actually, I thought the drive back was more peaceful in a weird way, even though it was eternal.
Here's something I'm really proud of. It was eternal. It was 6.5 hours instead of 3. So Bryn had a major league meltdown in the parking lot when you guys went into that restaurant. And I've been really trying to just ride the wave instead of trying to block the wave,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I pride myself on putting my foot down. And when I put my foot down, I don't back off. But I've been hitting the brake too hard, too quick.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've just been trying to find that balance of, if I say a thing, I mean it. But I'm toning down the sternness.
Well, this is...
And in that parking lot, when he was having a major league freak out, oh my God, I didn't... So this was in reaction to Target. Okay, we got to go back. On the way there, we had to go to Target to buy him a jacket because he lost his jacket. So it's been a great trip. We go into the Target and we get there and we get to find the jacket section, and there's one coat that's for 4 to 5 years old. And so I go, oh, Brent, look at this. And I put it on him and it fits perfectly. And then I go, great. And then I look at the next size up, which is 6, 7. And I go, let's try this on just in case, because it was a nice jacket and it might last. So he puts one arm in the new jacket and his fingers don't go to the end. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, this is probably too big. And then he takes it off and he goes, this is the one. I want this one. And I go, well, try it on so that I can see how big it is, because I'm not going to buy this. It might be too big. And he refused. And I was like, oh, okay, well, just try it on. And then suddenly he got really aggressive quickly and he was really embarrassed and I didn't notice it. So suddenly I was pushing against somebody that was freaking out and I didn't notice yet. And so then I was like, okay, all right, fine, let's get the other one. And then I tried to get the other one and he started freaking out that we weren't buying the big one. So then I said, okay, we can get the big one if you try it on. But he wouldn't try it on. And the biggest public meltdown I've ever been a part of. And so I tried to just back away and I go, okay, I riled him up. I didn't realize it. And I stayed calm and I just sat there and I waited and I let him be alone. I let him calm down. I changed the subject. We just talked and all that. And then finally we had to go. So I was like, all right. And then I called. I was like, I started like threatening him. We got donuts. If you don't do this, you're not going to get a donut. And I called you and I was like, are you going to eat Bryn's donut? And this is when I blew it. And then finally,
no,
it wasn't
worth
it.
Already
I finally just said, we have to go. And so I grabbed the one that I knew that fit. I said, let's go. And I started walking away. And he exploded with rage and started running in front of me. And he threw himself down in front of me on the ground. And I just like stepped over him and everyone was looking. And then I got into the self-checkout line and he started hitting me. And it was so crowded and I was so embarrassed. And I was trying to make jokes to the people around me. And as I was checking out, he was grabbing the coat and pulling it away and screaming, goes, I don't want it. I don't want it. And I just put my head down and walked out of the store. And as soon as we got in the parking lot, I lost it. And we put him in the car and he wouldn't put his seatbelt on. So I slammed the door and then I get in the car and I drive to go pick you guys up at Dunkin' Donuts. And he starts kicking the back of my seat as hard as he can, and he dumps out an entire box of animal crackers. And I'm going 5 miles an hour in the parking lot, and I like hit the brakes really hard, and he sort of stumbles, and I scream.
Oh my God. This story.
And I was so enraged, and I lost my mind.
Okay, can I talk? This is the longest story in the world. I feel like we have this conversation every single time we have a car trip where I beg you not to lay down the discipline at the beginning of a 3-hour car ride.
The thing is, I didn't.
No, because you from the very beginning, you were like, I need you to put this coat on. Like, here's okay. How this would have played out for me.
It's not how it started.
You said, I need you to try it on.
Right. Anyway.
And then you continue to lay down ultimatum after ultimatum.
As a result.
Drawing lines in the sand for him to get upset about.
As a result.
Can I say how I would have done this interaction?
I'm upset at how much you keep trying to describe a thing that you weren't there for, but go ahead.
You just described it in great detail for 5 minutes straight. I think I have a pretty good gist of what went down.
Well, the point of that setup was to talk about how I've reacted to him since then. Which I think
appreciate
has been
I've
a very positive trip.
I've also told you
trip.
This at the start of every single trip we take. Here's how this would have played out for me. I'm a mom. I'm planning a trip. I'm packing. I'm trying to get the car snacks, all these things, trying to keep everyone in my family happy and calm because I have 3 miserable hours stuck with them in a car. I realize we need a coat. I go into Target. My son starts being difficult. I say, hey, do you think if we're good, we could maybe get a pack of gum on the way out of here?
Oh, you are so condescending.
And then
this is what I did.
I leave Target.
Oh, yeah. you just bail on the jacket. You know what? I should have bailed on the jacket.
I would buy the jacket, but I would just distract him from his stubbornness.
Well, you might have done it. You might have nailed it. We'll never know. As a result, he had a freak out on the way back, and boy, I handled it great. And you know what? Tonight, I was incredibly overwhelmed today with a bunch of things, and I shut down at a certain point. And
you very dramatically shut down.
Yes. It was really bad, and I literally just had to go lay down.
Can I say what happened? I came home. I came early from work because it's like storming outside. And I walk in the front door. The kids are directly in front of the door, blankets spread out. There's like toys all strewn all over the place. And like a lot of like weird messes, like where they got into things that are not for kids. And they're like, just like, I'm like, what were they doing? Why is this thing here? I'm like, where's my husband? And then I go, and you're laying down in the dark in the bedroom, clearly overwhelmed by something. And so I closed you in there. And
you cleaned up, and I
cleaned up the apartment.
You don't know how much I appreciate it, because it was me trying to start unloading the dishwasher after making dinner that caused me to snap. And I said, I gotta lay down. But I tell you what, I was so defeated by the day that I had no energy to be confrontational with my kids. And I just let them sort of pass through me.
See, that's me a lot of the time, where I'm just like, I'm so tired. I'm like, I need this Sunday to involve rest.
And
just eat lunch meat, whatever you want.
The thing that was great is that I had no frustrations with them. I had no anger towards them. I had just was going through a personal crisis. And anything they were doing, I just remained completely calm. And there was almost zero fighting all night.
Wow.
And bedtime, you know, you saw them freaking out at bedtime. I had to lay down the law and do ultimatums, but I did it with zero attitude and zero aggression. And it was easy. And I was like, I need to remember what this feels like, minus the defeated, exhausted part, and just be liquid, not a wall. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm drinking vodka cranberry. What am I, 19? That was a very specific college thing I got drunk on once that it's real gross to me now. What's yours?
You made a drink that you now think is gross?
It's something I drank excessively one night before I knew what that meant. And so now that vodka is ruined for me.
The thing that I think is gross that I would drink when I was like underage, like, or people around me would drink, is like, oh my God, what's it called in the Big Lebowski with the Kahlua and milk?
White Russian?
White Russian. We would drink those for some reason. And it was like,
you and I went through a white Russian kick in 2010.
We did. It's like, it just makes you feel gross after a while. Like, you're like, why am I drinking all this like sugar and milk? Like, you know, it's not, it's like a milkshake. Like,
it's why it's so delicious.
I mean, stuff like that I think is fine if you're at like a holiday party or something and you have like one drink, but like you just, it's not. Like,
it's not something you should drink in excess. This is my 10th white Russian.
Ooh. So gross.
But one is yummy.
Yeah.
Should we get back into white Russian?
What if that's where this goes? Oh, God.
Next week, you guys, when you hear this clinkety clankety, it's going to be a white Russian. Now it's time for, do you notice what they're saying? This is where we talk about shit. I was going to say shits our kids say. This is where we're talking about shits our kids say.
We used to have one that was like, we knows why they're saying the darndest thing. Do you remember?
Yeah, because every time we intro it, it's a different title.
Yeah, we can't remember anything. So tonight I was pulling out Bryn's school photos because I was going to cut some up to give out to people. And the class photo was out and Bryn saw it and he was like, I mean, first of all, he got mad at me because he was like, I was talking about how we were going to give some of the photos to his grandparents. And he was like, we can't give them this one because it's like all of his friends. And he's like, this is my, and I'm like, no, it's okay. We're not going to give them that one. And then he was like holding the photo over by himself and looking at the kids. And he was looking at this girl, Reagan, and he was like whispering to himself and he goes, don't forget about me, Reagan. And I don't know.
Oh,
I don't know,
God.
If he saw that on like an X-Men cartoon or something. Like,
don't forget about
it. Just
me,
feels
Reagan.
Like he saw someone like wistfully staring at like a photo. Like, where did he come up with that? Because he left the room. He was like, I was like, what are you saying? And he's like, what? Nothing. And then he left the room. And as he was walking away, he did it again. He was like, don't forget about me, Rick.
Listen, I don't want to project anything onto my children.
But
he loves her. He's had inklings if he talks about how cool she is.
Yeah. I mean, he likes a lot of kids in his class.
Yeah, so it's
hard to tell because he was talking about having girlfriends, but then it became clear that he just thought girls you're friends with are called girlfriends.
Yeah.
So he doesn't.
Idiot.
He does love, like, romantic love stuff, though.
Oh, so we watched Home Alone. during Thanksgiving break, and it's the first time I think he's.
Should we transition this into? We knows what they're watching.
Yeah, we already did.
Okay,
and I think it's the first time he sat through an entire live action movie. Maybe that might not be true.
It feels like the first time our kids have watched like a classic live action kids movie. Like it's a. I'm sure they've seen other things, but it's a pretty rare that they sit still and like are like watching the whole movie.
They watched the whole thing. They loved it. I love he keeps going, remember when Kevin put the soap on his face and said, ah! I'm trying to keep explaining what aftershave is, and I realize it's pointless. But they love it. They love the violence, the slapstick
sort of
comedy.
Actually, but Maven sometimes robbers will come on. She goes, I don't like the bad guys.
She got scared.
She got a little scared during parts of it, and she left the room during Home Alone 2.
But Home Alone 1, which is an excellent movie, there's some rough language in there for a 5-year-old. They use the word.
It's very violent.
They use the word ass more than once.
In Home Alone 2, they literally show a clip from a black and white film where a woman is shot to death on screen. Like, it's...
They do that in one, but it's a...
I know.
Snakes.
Both times. It's very violent.
Keep the change, you filthy animal. I love one. There's all the... So,
I wish
Home
they
Alone...
could, like, replace those scenes. Like, they should do an edit that's just like...
No. Don't touch a thing. So that
it's
house.
So violent. There's also one scene where I was tempted to cover Maven's eyes, which is like, because I hate watching people get hurt.
You covered her eyes when he steps on the nail?
When he steps on the nail, it's so gross.
Didn't disturb me until I was older.
Yeah, probably. But I think Maven and I are sensitive to watching people get hurt.
Well, it seemed like overall she loved it. People falling down, hitting
the head. I think when the falls are really comical and it's like slipping, like that's funny. Like that's funny for most people. It's when it looks like when you're seeing an iron get dropped on someone's face and like their burned skin, that's when I'm like.
That was Maven's favorite part. I don't. She described it in a weird way. She didn't know what it was, but she thought it was really
well,
funny.
Well, there's parts of it where they don't understand what's happening. But as you get older, it's disturbing.
What does Buzz say? I wouldn't let you sleep in my room if you were growing on my ass.
The tension between Kevin and his family is so well done.
When Catherine O'Hara takes Macaulay Culkin upstairs and he goes up to the attic,
You really feel her, like, making some not necessarily empathetic choices, but you feel her exhaustion as a mom who's trying to pack, like, a bajillion kids for a trip.
Well, when he says, I hope I never see any of you ever again. And she goes, I hope you don't mean that. I do. Like, I teared up.
Yeah.
When you become a parent... Suddenly, you have to rewatch every movie you've ever watched. And now there's a whole new layer where you're like, oh, now I get it. I got teary during that fight scene and him saying that he wished they'd all disappeared. You'd be pretty sad if you woke up tomorrow morning and you had no family. No, I wouldn't.
Well, maybe this is another funny
example. At the end, when she comes home, it's very emotional. And Bryn cried when he hugged his mom and she was back. And I wanted to hug him and cry too.
He was so sensitive. I do think it's like a really primal thing to make kids movies about like not having a mom around. Like it's so, like kids are like, yeah, that's the worst.
I just started reading James and the Giant Peach tonight. And the first two chapters are harsh. Like aunts. Spiker and Aunt Sponge are terrible and they just make him cry. In the end of the second chapter, he runs off and just sobs into his hands.
Oh, no.
Bursts into tears.
Well, so Bryn had another, do you know, we knows what they're saying moment after the movie where I was like, so Bryn, what was your favorite part? And he was like, remember when they left him alone? It was like, he was just so casual about it. He's like, do you remember that part where they left him alone?
Yeah, his favorite part was the full premise of the movie.
The whole thing.
My favorite part is when he was home alone.
He has a good point, though. Like, that's sort of the crux. Like, that's really what's driving the movie.
I mean, that is the hook. So I grew up in the same town as to where that movie was filmed.
I know. Well, it feels like a very weird setup for going there for Christmas because I was like, there's multiple airport scenes in O'Hare and I was like, we're gonna be there.
Yeah.
We're gonna be at this airport.
And they go to their house. We're gonna be four blocks from that house. I just gave you a hint as to where you can find us. The poor people that own that house now, they had to put up a big fence because now that the internet has happened, there's fucking weirdo idiots like sneaking into their backyard. They have all these signs up that's like no trespassing because clearly people go around the back of their house and take pictures and shit. And it's like, don't do that. Don't do that, people.
Don't go into other people's yards.
Never. Although, has there ever been a movie where a house was a more central character? Like, I know every room in that house because the storytelling is so
well. Panic room.
I don't remember what panic room.
Cabin on the Hill.
I don't remember the physical space. Cabin on the Hill. Pork Chop Bay.
What's the one? Inferno. Towering Inferno.
I mean, you're naming movies where buildings are locations. But what movies have buildings in which you could describe the relationship of all the rooms, or you can visually picture how everything connects?
I don't think you can visually picture how everything connects.
In the Home Alone?
No.
100%
Every room?
I could draw you a picture.
No, you couldn't.
If it wasn't so late, I would demand that we pause and I would draw a picture and then we Google it and compare.
Well, because you lived in a town where this house was. You've seen it from all angles.
Well, I've not been inside it.
Oh, my God. There are plenty of movies where people are iconically familiar with this set and location.
I'm not saying there aren't other movies.
Downton Abbey.
I couldn't tell you how that thing's put together.
Because you didn't watch the show closely, not as closely as you've watched Home Alone.
It's true. I've seen Home Alone 1,900 times. Best Christmas movie. I'm
gonna go. Just think about movies before you make grand sweeping statements.
I'm thinking about all the other ones.
All the other ones. You're thinking about all the other ones.
The Millennium Falcon. I don't even know that as well. Nope. Hogwarts. Don't know how it's connected.
Well, that's partly because they changed the locations.
It's true.
Between movies.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Don't get me started. But could you say where the Shire is in location in relation to...
Bag End? Bag End is in the Shire.
Yeah, come on.
I meant the town of Bree. It's the next stop. Then Rivendell.
Then we've got those forest elves. And then we got to go down that river.
Ugh. And then we got to go over that waterfall. Lothlorien, Gondor. Boy,
anyways, this is Movie Crush with Chuck Bryant. Chuck Bryant, we need to plug at least once every podcast.
It's true. Oh, yeah. So Chuck texted me because we mentioned him, but he also wanted to say that I said something that I didn't realize I said, which is I meant to say, and even as he was texting me, I didn't understand what he was talking about, why it was so funny. But I meant to say any press is good press. All press is good press. But I said all news is good news. And that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, we get tired when we're recording this podcast.
But you know, all news is good news.
Okay.
In my book. Oh boy, this is empty.
How's that White Russian?
It's, hey man, the dude abides. And now it's time for Did You Knows? This is where we share some stuff that we read or learned recently. Beth, you got one. Take it away.
Okay. So this is an article from the New York Times by Jessica Gross. It's called Early Motherhood Has Always Been Miserable. And then they quote, this thing says, I declare if I thought I was to be thus occupied for the rest of my life, one new mom wrote in 1828, I would lie down and die. And so the article sort of like goes on to explain that like traditionally Middle Ages and earlier people considered babies to be basically hell beasts. And they acknowledged how exhausting they are. And then around the Victorian age and afterwards, they started creating sort of this idealized version of motherhood to sort of like keep these, as society industrialized and middle class white women were no longer being put to work all the time, they had to shift their focus to exclusively child rearing. And so they created this sort of like fiction of how mothers are so constantly loving being around their children, their precious, beautiful children.
And it's so easy.
And it just comes so naturally to us and we love it.
I like this article set it up that in juxtaposition of, not in juxtaposition, in mirroring today's sort of the idealized Instagram version of motherhood. Look at my perfect family. I lay my baby out and see here's the 3-month picture, and they've got an elaborate, you know, all that stuff. If you do that, that's fine. That's great. But, and then also the, you know, the comedians and writers of the parenting is hell down in the muck. And this article does a really interesting job of painting a picture of around this time you're describing is that's always been true, just in a different media format.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because I think when it's one of those weird paradoxes where when women were sort of doing more like exclusively child rearing and like maintaining the household and stuff, it almost feels like in some ways they got more respect for it. And then as we've started like making up like these various standards for women to live up to, we sort of just like devalue them all and like don't give credit for the effort that goes into them.
That's interesting.
I don't know. It's just very...
So how do you feel? Let's talk about... How do you feel about how do you present yourself as a mother to the world?
Well, I mean obviously today I'm doing this podcast and I wrote a book about pregnancy called There's No Manual. You can pre-order now, out February 4th. But when I first became pregnant, I feel like I think this is a general thing, but especially like in New York thing, I kind of felt like everyone was like, wow, what a lame choice you've made. Why would you want to have children? I guess you're someone who just loves children and is boring and bad. That's sort of the vibe I got from people, that I feel like men don't get that reaction. Like, I had moments where I'd like be getting drinks, like in sort of like a networky type comedy setting, and like some guy would be like talking to me like very interested, and then like I would say something about being pregnant when I guess I was not like visibly pregnant, and like their reactions on people's faces and like how their regard for me just fell so swiftly. But it's like such a weird thing, because it's like, I thought you were a sex object and now you're a mom. Like, it's just like this weird like
Or did you also feel like maybe you got some of the like, oh, maybe now you're fragile and I don't know.
It's a lot of things, but it's just like, I don't think people, we live in a society that devalues women. Therefore, women doing some of the most valuable and intrinsically female behavior of procreating are essentially devalued the most. Because if we've valued what is being done by women in terms of bearing and raising children, we would have to acknowledge that all of society needs to be restructured around this like incredibly hard, crazy thing that people are doing. Like, it's just like, it's I don't know, it's like just so weird to live in a world where when you look around at your mom friends and you're like, wow, these people are raising kids, they're holding down jobs, they're helping their husband with his various health issues. It's some of the most capable people I know. And it's not just at home, but like in their jobs, in their whatever. And then to know that they're being treated like they're lesser than in situations when they're actually more capable is very frustrating. Because it's like, we devalue any kind of emotional labor, anything that requires intuition, anything that requires like sensitivity, we're like, oh, that's just dumb, bad work. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, I also feel, I think you were right, you mentioned this, but, you know, in our social circle at the time, did we really have any close friends with babies? And so on top of that, our very specific scenario is people like, I don't know. It's not a real thing until we did it, and they didn't know how to.
I also think when you live in a world that like operates all around all of these different structures and schools and daycares and whatever, like I think it's very hard for a lot of people to not, like, when you experience a life change like this, like you get married or something, like suddenly you're part of like the marriage industrial complex if you're not thoughtful, or if you like don't even notice necessarily that you're aware of all these pressures on you to behave a certain way as you're experiencing this thing that like are not necessary. Like, and you know what? I'm just going to, as usual, just sort of swing this into an endorsement for Elizabeth Warren. But what I love about her candidacy so much is that she really understands the struggles real people are facing, real women, real moms, women trying to have jobs so they can both support their children and be there for their children. Like, she had this really beautiful moment on the campaign trail this week where this young girl who's nearly in tears was asking her what she's done when someone she loved didn't like respect her decision or thoughts about something. I don't remember the question exactly, but it was like, have you ever been in a position where someone you really cared about did not support you? And Elizabeth Warren starts like also kind of like tearing up and talking about her mom. Her mom had raised her to believe that she needed to marry well and that that was the goal. And I'm sure that was not an uncommon thing for a mother of Elizabeth Warren's mother's generation to try to steer their daughter towards, because logistically, she wants her daughter to have a good life. And she comes from a generation where women didn't work. And Elizabeth Warren, when she was divorcing her first husband and the marriage wasn't working out, her mom was really disappointed in her to not make it work. And she's like, I just couldn't make it work. And like, that's what I love about her candidacy, is she understands like real life. Like, she will weave stories like this and stories about her dad having a heart attack and her mom having to go to work for the first time. Like, she understands the things that real people are going through and the ways that the structures that we have set up in our society are not allowing people to live healthy, happy lives.
There was some stories this weekend of those same generational expectations that seem so crazy to hear now. That, like,
oh, you mean like from my mom, whose father wanted her to get married and not have a child. He was like, you'll just get a man to take care of you. You don't need to go to nursing school.
Yeah. And it's that was not that long ago where.
Well, it's funny because it's not just like offensive and like, you know, limiting, but it's also just bad life advice. Like, my mom is always like, in retrospect, if I hadn't had a job, I don't know how we would have survived. Like, she needed a job. Like,
yeah,
it's just, it's.
But like, he didn't have any other reference. I'm sure at the, I can't relate to growing up in a place and time where, like, yeah, that there, you didn't see other options. And so it's like, oh yeah, that's how people do it, yeah. Right?
But it's detached from reality, and it's detached from women's reality, and it's detached from like observing the women around you and what they're experiencing. Because like, my grandfather said that to my mom. His dad died of tuberculosis when he was like a baby. Like, he didn't, like, his mom obviously was supporting him. He grew up poor. He had jobs, like after school jobs from a very young age, mm-hmm. to like support the family. Yeah. Like, it shouldn't be a mystery to him that like work is not a thing to like deny yourself. Like, I'm sure his mom was working.
Yeah.
It's just,
well,
we uphold these ideas of like, especially with white women, this like form of white womanhood that is like the purest, best way of being. And it's like, it's narrow and limiting, but also too many boxes to check at the same time. Like, it's an impossible standard.
Well, I think we can all agree that we're glad your mom went to nursing school.
We're very glad.
Would I know you if she hadn't?
I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows?
I mean.
So thank you, Beth's mom, for not listening to that advice.
And thanks for the heart surgery that my mom had at a very young age that inspired her to be a nurse.
Oh, yeah.
And thank you.
Your mom, so Beth's mom, we had one of the, as I understand it, one of the very early first open heart surgeries.
Yeah.
Before it was a common thing.
It was like, yeah, it was very, it was very new for them to be doing open heart surgeries specifically on children, I believe, but probably everyone. And it was one of those things where they're like, we don't know if it's going to work. So then when it did work, they would like parade her around.
They were like, hey, look at that.
They would literally throw parades. Like, they'd have like a Miss Heart Fund thing and like have these like little girls who had heart surgery. Be like,
March, the little heart girls.
Dance around and prove to people that healthcare is a worthy thing. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that worked out.
I'm glad she's alive and that I was able to be an alive person.
I'm glad that you were able to be an alive person, because this podcast would be real awkward if you weren't one. Yeah. Welcome back to Peter and Make Believe Corpse. an awkward show that nobody likes and makes everyone uncomfortable. Because I'm going to stop explaining this.
Anyway, babies are actually terrible. Get their record straight. It's
for the
impossible
record,
to live with a baby.
They are. And my favorite quote in this article is in the Middle Ages, they refer to them as you said, hell beasts. I'm like, yeah, you know, sometimes our kids are little hell beasts.
Yeah.
In a Target, in a house.
Well, I think also back then they were like, well, that woman would probably have like 10 babies. We don't need to value this one specifically. We'll start valuing it when it lives past two.
I mean, half of these aren't going to make it.
Yeah. They were like, let's not invest too much in
this
little elf spawn.
The agricultural revolution, when everyone sat down and started farming, they could produce so much food that you could have a bunch of babies, but way more of them died because we were all unhealthy.
Can I tell you one of the funniest things one of my midwives said to me after, I think, while I was pregnant or afterwards, after I had the baby, I can't remember. One of the midwives who is this really no-nonsense woman who I kind of love, but she's like, can be very curt. She was talking to me about breastfeeding and talking about like trying to get like a not painful latch because, you know,
no one wants a painful latch.
You got to force these kids to learn how to do it where it's not killing you. But she was saying, she would be like, if you were like living in like cave times or something and this baby is like gnawing your nipple off, you just leave him under a bush. Like, she was just like,
you wouldn't put up with that.
Like, she's like, and it's really funny to hear that because you're just like, oh, yeah. Like, if I was just going on primal instincts and I was like, this thing came out of me, it's sucking the life out of me, and it's incredibly painful, and I'm tired and sore, and I just want to, like, not, like, you can see how in certain situations of, like, desperation, like, it makes sense why, like, women literally experience psychosis.
And they throw the baby under a bush, but that's why that cry gets you back. You run out of the cave and you're like, I'm through with that. Then you hear,
and
you're like, oh no, other emotions.
But you have to bond with the baby first, and that doesn't always happen.
There's a lot of conflicting reward systems in your brain.
It's so hard being
and
that's
human.
Why if you're a postpartum woman in the modern world, if you're experiencing difficulties, you should seek help from a mental health professional because it's very common to feel horrible.
Ask for help.
Okay. Have we talked enough about the hell beasts?
Yeah, dude. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. We love you. But also, if you want to reach out, ask a question, send us some advice, share something cool, send us an email at weknowspod@gmail.com or call our voicemail number at, that was a big setup for Beth,
347-384-7396.
Write us a review. Leave us a rating wherever you get your podcast.
Subscribe.
And my babies, we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.